Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we visit with Derek Webb, the inventor of the table game three-card poker, which has become the most popular new table game in the history of gaming. The GGB podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the nation's leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos. Derek Webb is the inventor of three-card poker, the most successful proprietary table game in the history of the gaming industry. While not the first proprietary game in the industry, it has become the most successful because of its unique play, multiple bets, and potentially large payouts. Webb went on to develop other games and has a keen eye for possible successful ideas and general trends in the industry. Now retired after selling his company, Prime Table Games, to Galaxy Gaming, he spoke with me about the cover story for this month's magazine in February. Derek Webb, thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast. You know, we've known each other for over 20 years, and I've been doing this for about 10 years, and I'm surprised that we never got a chance to do this, so I'm very glad we can get together.
Yeah, great to meet up with you again, Roger. Thank you.
So let's talk about your game, Three Card Poker, the most successful proprietary table game in the industry. You really went through hell and high water to get it approved, make it successful. So let's just start from the beginning. Well, you know, what was your idea for the game, and how did you roll it out?
The initial concept was I was designing a game for Britain. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to design something that no Americans would have done any work on.
Right.
So that was the concept of going for a three-card game. Mm-hmm. And at the time, there were two successful games, Caribbean Stud right. and Let It Ride. Mm-hmm. And ignoring the electronic component for right. a minute, each one was potentially a three-bet, mm-hmm. a three-unit bet game.
Right.
So I wanted to design a three-unit bet game that incorporated what I thought was the best of Caribbean and the best of Let It Ride, mm-hmm. create a little bit of a player choice, which is like a sort of a roulette-style concept of mm-hmm. the player choosing which bets they want to make.
Right.
And it was going to be naturally faster than Caribbean or Let It Ride, mm-hmm. but also the design needed to make sure that we got the three-bet units out more frequently mm-hmm. than Caribbean or Let It Ride.
Right.
And those two combined features meant that I could go with a lower house advantage than either of those games,
right.
and give the player a more positive experience, but at the same time create a higher win for the operator. So in effect, you're serving both sides of the table better than what was already out there.
Right. And you know, the operator made more money because more hands got out.
It was the combination of more hands, also the higher total wager.
Right, right.
But also, it was not just designed to appeal to what I'll call a grind player, a minimum. Sometimes, some of the players that would sit at the Caribbean or Let It Ride tables, there was kind of minimum stake players who were looking for a long odds payoff.
Right.
I want to cater for the gamblers more, the people who want to gamble, the people who are in it for the engagement, and the better win frequency, the three-card hands are easier to achieve,
sure.
so they create a better win frequency, mm-hmm. so you're getting a better distribution of payback to more players, getting more payback, so more players are willing to engage for a little bit higher stakes.
Mm-hmm. So, and there was a certain bit of strategy to your game as well that wasn't present in Caribbean Stud, right?
Well, there was Caribbean Stud. There was the decision about what hand to,
right.
to
mm-hmm.
what type of hand rank to make the second bet on.
Right.
Whereas the second bet in the against dealer mode, yes, it's the same concept mm-hmm. of qualification. However, it was a little bit easier at three card poker because it was only a single bet
right.
relative to your first bet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you played it badly, it didn't hurt you as much as it did at Caribbean Stud, where it was a double bet
right.
relative to your initial bet.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to with Let It Ride, there were two additional bets. If you played a poor strategy at Let It Ride,
right.
it would hurt you more
mm-hmm.
than playing a poor strategy would at three-card poker.
Right.
But the strategy was pretty simple. It was designed to be simple and sure. simply understood.
Right.
And notionally, it's play with queen high or better, and which is
right.
what the dealer qualifies with. Now, the exact perfect strategy is something like queen 6-4 or better, mm-hmm. but it's so marginal the difference, it doesn't
sure.
really matter.
Right, right, okay. So you developed the game. Where did was it first offered to the public?
We first got it operational in a little card room in Dublin. I didn't get any revenue out of that.
Okay.
That was what's now known as a grey area, as we call
right.
it.
Yes.
But it was a members' poker
mm-hmm.
club, and the members could bank the poker games
okay.
or deal the poker right. games, etc. So that gave me some feedback, and I got the casino operator from the Isle of Man, little offshore island
right.
between Ireland and England. Mm-hmm. He came there and had a look at it, and that was the first casino we got it started in.
Okay.
And at that time, it was competing against Casino Stud, which was the British version, if you will, of Caribbean Stud,
right. mm-hmm.
without the electronics.
Sure.
And within 2 weeks, we'd more or less knocked Casino Stud out of the
yeah.
casino
mm-hmm.
based upon the immediate attraction. So I was then able to use that. I got some coverage in the trade press, so
mm-hmm.
thanks to the trade press
yes.
for some of the work they do.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was fascinated when it came to this country, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, So some of that, we got some positive coverage on that Isle of Man introduction, which we used as leverage to try and get started in the US.
Right, okay. So getting into the US, though, was another hurdle. Regulatory agencies in every state. What was the first state you went to?
We really tried to get started everywhere at once, which
yeah.
wasn't the correct way to go. It
right.
was just my ego, and
right.
I had the time, I had the money.
Right.
There we
who,
go.
Who knew, right?
Yeah. So eventually we got started in Mississippi and Nevada at a pretty similar time.
Right.
Mississippi was a great installation, and that, to some extent, that was a personal contact through Lyle Berman, who
right.
I played poker with,
mm-hmm.
and he owned the Grand in Gulfport.
Right. I remember seeing you at the Gulfport Grand behind the tables introducing people to three-card poker, so that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was early 96, actually,
right.
20 years ago, over 20 years ago. And they did a great installation
mm-hmm.
because They put it in a great location, and they gave me all the statistics on it.
Mm-hmm.
They allowed me to help write their internal procedures.
Mm-hmm.
They spent time with me to get it right. They allocated 1 day of working with the trainers
mm-hmm. okay.
to train the dealers,
right.
get the installation correct. So, and the executive there really deserved credit, Barry Morris. He,
right.
he deserves credit for that.
Certainly.
And so that was a great start for us in Mississippi.
Right, right. And then what was your first installation here in Nevada?
In Nevada, we ended up going with the Stardust.
Right.
And unfortunately, and I'm afraid this is still true today,
mm-hmm.
that Nevada operators do not do a diligent enough job with new game installation.
Mm-hmm.
They expect their dealers to be able to learn the games
right.
quickly.
Right.
They do not pay attention to the nuances. They do not try to maximize
mm-hmm.
the revenue from the game.
Right.
And unfortunately, whilst the game did enough to pass its field trial and the volume of revenue was adequate, the
right.
volume of participation was adequate, the hold percentage was pretty low, and there was a couple. One problem, in fact, was the old shuffling machines at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you may recall there was an incident in New Jersey whereby some of the chips in the shufflers were
right.
not designed to mm-hmm. do what it said on the box, if you will.
Right.
And I did some experiments with the shuffling machines which showed that there was not adequate distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with three-card hands, that's very important.
Right.
You know,
sure.
even if a guy throws a hand away, like a Jack Ten of clubs, deuce of
mm-hmm.
diamonds, they'd probably go ahead and put those two connected cards together.
Sure.
If those cards don't separate or separate by only one card in the shuffle, you're creating too many premium hands.
Right.
So we ended up having to say to operators, if you're going to use a shuffling machine, you have to use it in this specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of our contractual requirements,
sure,
that we're not going to go ahead with the game,
right,
unless you go ahead the way we need to do it.
Right, okay. So the rule of thumb for new games is when you actually go onto the floor, you're going to replace a game that's already performing, that's already, you know, making revenue for the casino, but your game has to be at least to that level, if not higher. Did you find that to be true when you put your games in?
Yes, in general, if the operators, in theory, the operator can say, well, I've got a quiet blackjack table,
right,
I'll try it there.
Yeah.
But they're not really trying it.
Right.
I mean, they can go that route, sure, but they're not really trying it because they're not getting open adequately. They're not giving it enough exposure.
Yeah.
If they're not willing to put it in a good location on the floor to start with,
mm-hmm,
then they're not really making an adequate commitment,
sure,
to make the game work.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to generate as much revenue as the game it is replacing, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, a guy could be rearranging his pit. He could be moving a $100 blackjack table, mm-hmm, out of the pit and, right, saying, I'm going to put, sure, some specialty game in.
Right.
In that case, you wouldn't expect it to do as much,
right,
as the table it's replacing.
Right.
So there are exceptions to that.
Mm-hmm.
But if essentially a proprietary game, a standalone proprietary game, like such as a poker game,
sure,
competes with other poker games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the benchmark. Is it generating as much revenue,
right,
as that other game? However, there are other benefits that if a game can generate player loyalty or attract a few key players to your property,
mm-hmm,
that aren't coming to your property as frequently, then there are merits to a new game if it is that type of game.
Right.
And fortunately, three card poker was. We met many people who travelled to play the game and drove past casinos that,
sure,
didn't have the game.
Right.
So that's if you can get a game that's got those merits or,
mm-hmm,
or those attractions, then there is more to it than just matching the revenue.
Sure.
There are more benefits.
Great. Okay, so you get your game on the floor. I know you and Hannah, who is a brilliant marketer, would stand behind the game for an extended period of days, introducing people to the game, showing them how it's played. How important is that to do that if you're a game inventor, to be able to have that marketing ability?
Well, we started that in Mississippi after,
right,
the game had been approved. It,
okay,
was a learning curve.
Right.
We didn't do that right away,
mm-hmm,
but we experienced what I'll call the failure in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd also got it started in New Jersey,
right,
and the regulations there were horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't talk to the players,
right,
and the game had to be dealt certain ways, etc. So there's a lot of regulatory impediments in New Jersey.
Sure.
In Mississippi, that was where we started that program, and we didn't stand. We stood outside the pit. We didn't,
right,
stand inside,
sure,
the pit.
Right.
Sort of around,
yeah,
talking to the players. But Hannah was great at just let me show you the new game.
Right.
And it's an explanation. But when everybody's listening to the explanation, who's in proximity, even if you're having a conversation,
sure,
with,
right,
one person,
yeah,
and the dealer who is lacking confidence because they're on a new game, they're listening to how to do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was any dealer errors, that was an opportunity to explain, oh, sorry, this has happened, but it shouldn't be happening because. So you were kind of able to nurse that through.
Sure.
So the sort of program we started on was, we'll do the training Monday and Wednesday, or Tuesday and Thursday, according to how the operator wanted to do it. And we might be doing two startups that,
mm-hmm,
week, but then you have to start on the Friday.
Right.
We're going to be there when you start, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to hand how to play cards out. We're going to talk to people about how to play the game. And again, I had to control the installation. I had to say to the operator, this is how we're going to do it.
Right.
And if they weren't ready to start on the Friday, we were not ready to do the training. We wouldn't come and do the training.
Sure.
And they had to have the contract signed before they could install the game.
Right.
So that was the way that went.
Looking to acquire valuable players for your online casino or even your land-based property? Check out iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing site for legal online gaming in the U.S. iGamingPlayer is one of the first and only online affiliate marketing sites licensed in New Jersey. iGamingPlayer delivers quality customers and profitable players with its mix of online gaming news, play for free games, and information on the best promotions offered by its partner online casinos, poker rooms, and land-based casinos. iGamingPlayer uses the vast knowledge about players and their behaviors to deliver players to your online casino and act as the bridge to your bricks and mortar property. So visit iGamingPlayer.com to see what you've been missing.
So you would say then to people who are introducing games to casinos and they've gotten it far enough so that it can be introduced that they kind of have to lay the groundwork with the casinos. The casinos really have to listen to the game inventors for it to be a success.
Well... There are game inventors and there are game inventors.
Right, right.
So without...
Right. This of course, you have the big companies now, too, that are introducing them all the time. And there's no face behind the game.
Yeah. Two separate sort of angles there.
Yes.
I had the advantages that I've been around gambling forever.
Sure.
I've been a poker player.
Right.
That's all I did for 20-odd years
sure.
or so. And I'd spent a lot of time in company of gamblers and staff
right.
and executives, just mm-hmm. the way it went. And I was able to converse with confidence about the merits of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I never said I got a great game.
Right.
I never said my friends like the game, because
mm-hmm.
that's all irrelevant.
Right, sure.
In my opinion, doesn't matter.
Right.
The facts matter. So I presented factually why the game would outperform Let It Ride and Caribbean Stud.
Right.
And that it was designed to deliver that.
Right.
So that was easy for me. I think it's a lot harder today for an individual because three-card poker has been upgraded by the extra bet.
Mm-hmm.
In Britain, we have the prime bet on it, which is
right.
a bet on... all three cards being the same colour.
Mm-hmm.
And I say we, I don't own the game anymore anywhere,
right, sure.
but that's the
mm-hmm.
the nature of it. So all three cards being the same colour. So you can get a bad hand in the conventional game, but you get 3-1, which covers all your other bets. So the revenue there has been kicked up by that. Other games that have come forward have had to compete with three-card poker that have come forward since. So they've had to have a higher bar than Caribbean and Let It Ride has. So for another game to make the breakthrough, it's really got to do better than three card and these other games that
right.
primarily Shuffle Master has brought forward
mm-hmm.
that are able to compete with three card poker.
Right.
So the bar is a lot higher, and a lot of, Shuffle Master went through a phrase of, it was an error of judgment on their part. It was Dr. Mark Yoseloff
mm-hmm.
wanted to increase the share prices
right.
and his bonuses.
Right.
And he ended up doing these leases to sell.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have the ability to understand the game would last forever.
Right.
And he thought it would be a good idea to pump things up and sell off the tables.
Right.
So there's now quite a lot of three-card poker tables that the casinos own.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you compete with what is now effectively a free table
right.
because they own the table, you
mm-hmm.
see. So I think it's very hard for an individual to come up with a game that can make the breakthrough. And how does the individual sort of work through all the intellectual property that's already out there?
Right.
How can the individual sort of get the arms around enough that's new?
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to be, it's very difficult to bring something out that is too different to what's already out
sure,
there.
Right.
Everybody, you've seen so many games fail.
Yeah.
You know, cards with things on other than the conventional cards. What, which game? Which of those games has ever worked?
Sure.
But you've, how many games have you seen, Roger, that that have never made it?
I mean, and you know, the rule of thumb they say these days is it has to be poker related or blackjack related, and but even most of those games fail.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it is a lot easier for large companies,
right,
because they're able to get it started somewhere, see how it flies, and they've got connections throughout the country. They're licensed everywhere,
right,
and they're able to think this is going to work better in this market because they know what's in that market.
Right.
The individual hasn't got, starting out, doesn't have a clue
right.
of the variations from market
sure.
to market.
Right.
So there's an enormous learning curve there, particularly as gaming has expanded compared to where it was 20 years ago,
right.
which was a lot easier for
sure.
us
yeah.
because there was,
right.
there was less jurisdictions to hit.
Yeah, exactly. So you the game's a success. What are some of your challenges then? I mean, you've got companies like Shuffle Master coming to say, "Well, I want to buy your game," and then you know the whole intellectual property thing. I mean, people probably were knocking your game off all the time.
Well, it wasn't exactly that way. a company, Micon, PGIC, sued us, claiming we were infringing their
right.
rights. That was in 98.
Mm-hmm.
Shuffle Master and PGI were already in litigation over
right.
the same subject matter. We sold to Shuffle Master and they agreed to defend us in that litigation.
Okay.
We subsequently discovered that PGI had committed fraud against us and fraud on the Patent Office. We subsequently brought litigation against them, which we prevailed and got a nice award.
Mm-hmm.
But it took until 2007
sure.
for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
During that discovery, we also learned that Shuffle Master had knowledge of the fraud that had been committed against us.
Mm-hmm.
So the sale to them, they obtained an advantageous sale
mm-hmm.
through misrepresenting that
right.
they were defenders without disclosing the information that they had
mm-hmm.
that meant the defence costs would be far less
right.
than we perceived there would be. So essentially, Shuffle Master obtained an asset that's probably generated $1 billion in equity for them between
right.
the share price equity, the total revenues over the years, the total sales over the years, the fact that they've been able to use the three-card pair plus component added to Let It Ride in order to increase the longevity of Let It Ride.
Right.
And they've got away sort of scot-free
mm-hmm.
with that acquisition
right.
under those inappropriate circumstances.
Right. So there's a lot of things that a game inventor will have to keep their eye on. Of course, these days, you know, a lot of them go to the Shuffle Masters and the other game developers and you know, partner with them right at the start. What do you have to be aware of when you do something like that?
Well, firstly, you're probably not going to get a very good deal.
Right.
In the early days,
mm-hmm.
everybody saw Caribbean and Let It Ride and thought it was easy.
Right.
And you could get a 50-50 deal in the
right.
early days, something
sure.
like a 60-40, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the vendors will be, the existing suppliers will be saying, we're licensed everywhere.
Right.
And we've got a portfolio of games. We've got a lot of intellectual property.
Right.
You haven't really been granted much intellectual property yet,
sure. right.
in all probability.
Mm-hmm.
Really, can we give you more than 10 or 20%,
right.
sort of?
Yeah.
So, that's okay, you know, okay, I've brought the idea to you, you're going to give me 10%, it sounds great.
Right.
But the salespeople have got to want to sell the game.
Right.
So, the game has really got to deliver at a level that outperforms a lot of their existing games
mm-hmm.
that they're already comfortable with selling.
Right.
And even if it has the ability to do that, if it doesn't do that from the get-go, mm-hmm. if it fails in its first installation, right. if the operator screws up on the first installation, mm-hmm. or if there's a little bit of needs tweaking or something right. like that, mm-hmm. you know, so it's very difficult to go to a supplier and do a good deal,
right.
and the most of Shuffle Master games are in-house
right.
at this time. Mm-hmm. AGS has done a number of acquisitions, right. mm-hmm. but typically they were smaller side bet style games, which are actually easier to get started.
Sure.
And the revenue point is way lower
right.
than it is on a standalone game. Mm-hmm. Galaxy, they've got sort of the portfolio they acquired from us, and they've got right. the odd game from mm-hmm. some other party, but right. mainly it's in-house. Mm-hmm. So, it's just so difficult to make the breakthrough
right.
for the new entrant, right. whichever way they choose.
Mm-hmm. And then some of the games, Casino War, they're just so simple that I don't know how you can even fail to understand what's going on there. Is simplicity still the key to every new game?
Yes and no. If simplicity was the key to it, then we'd have Vegas would be full of casino wars,
right?
Yeah. So simplicity alone isn't what it takes. Blackjack. Is still very popular,
right.
despite what's happened to the game in terms of reduced
6-5
3-2 to 6-5.
Right.
So people, table games players, want to feel as though they're gambling. They want to feel as though they understand things. Mm-hmm. They want to feel as though they're making decisions. Even the baccarat players, they're making decisions based on luck. Or
right.
the roulette players are making decisions based on patterns.
Right.
The craps players are making decisions based on who is rolling.
Right.
So all these people are making decisions based upon whatever justification they have. Oh, I know how to play poker, right?
Yeah.
So I can play a poker game, right? So, and there's those... I mean, we've got the player advice cards in the gift shop telling you how to play blackjack,
right.
telling you how to win.
Right.
How to win. Come and play at this game
yeah.
you can win at, right? So... It isn't just simplicity, and I hate this test that you got to explain it to me in 20 seconds or
yeah.
30 seconds. If a dealer says, "How do I get somebody to play the game?" I'm at an empty table.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody comes up. How do I explain to them to play the game? Well, sit down a minute. I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
But the best way to do is get some cash out, buy some chips, and it's easier when we do it with chips,
right?
Right? So it's how do you, it's what's the engagement level,
mm-hmm.
and part of introducing a new game is explaining to the staff how to sell it to the players.
Right.
So if the operator's not willing to let you do that,
mm-hmm.
they're going to miss revenue.
Right.
And...
Well, you mentioned how much time you spend on training. And it just goes beyond just, you know, the physical procedures of dealing. It's also encouraging people and explaining what's going on as they're going through the process. That's true?
Oh, absolutely. And even... You know, we've got this 21 plus 3, which is
right.
the side bet,
mm-hmm.
and it's the first two players' cards with the dealer up card make a three-card hand.
Right.
And that is such a simple side bet.
Mm-hmm.
However, we still did training. We still visited the property, and
right.
we still wanted to be there when they did the installation.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early days, I had... One guy wanted to. I want to go ahead with it. I want to do it as soon as possible. I'll fly my trainer to Vegas, right? She can
right.
meet with you. I said no. I don't want to do it that way. I'll when we're ready, I'll come to you and we'll do it the way I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some terrible installations of three card poker, of 21 plus 3, sorry, where the operators have done it the way they want to do it.
Right.
The first thing is it was designed to be a composite payoff, 9-1, mm-hmm. rather than a pay scale.
Right.
There's an advantage of that. One, it's very fast, because mm-hmm. you're not working out different right. payoffs all right. the time. Two, it's an odd payoff. We want the dealers to give out odd denomination chips. You don't want round numbers mm-hmm. being given to the players, because
right.
you give out higher denomination chips, and you're encouraging the player to leave the table right. when you give them higher denomination
right.
chips.
Right.
So these 5-1, 10-1 payoffs, they're not a good way to go.
Right.
You know. So, and it was designed to be the same minimum as the table minimum if it was $5 or less,
right?
So the idea that it's got a very high win frequency, the idea that this is a $1 side bet is
yeah.
insane.
Yeah.
And the idea that you want to have a $25 maximum on it, that's another insane component.
Right.
There is a wealthy gambler in one of the premium casinos in London who bets £1,000 a time on the 21 plus 3 right. side bet.
Yeah.
But not one operator in Las Vegas has been willing to go with this 9-1, 21 plus 3 side bet
right.
and put it in the high stakes pit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense.
Right. So on blackjack side bets, is it crucial that the side bet doesn't interfere with the normal play of the blackjack game?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And 21 plus 3 is the fastest
right.
because it's just really easy mm-hmm. hand recognition.
Yeah.
It's a uniform payoff.
Yeah.
yeah. So that's the fastest. It's the easiest. Mm-hmm. And it gets a higher participation than when it's done at the 9-1 shot
right.
and when it's correctly sold to the players.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a higher participation, a higher total wager, and it gets the highest revenue per table to the supplier
right.
for any non-electronic blackjack side bet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the real measure, is what,
right.
what revenue can the supplier charge for the game.
Right.
That tells you actually what the success of the game is.
Yeah.
So in the same way, you know, again, I'm giving you a little ego shot here. I created the premium standalone game. I also created the premium blackjack side bet game.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So what do you think technology has in store for table games now? You mentioned the electronic side bets and things like that. Are we going to see more technology introduced into the table game arena?
The suppliers will want to introduce technology.
Right.
Because technology, it's easier to get something exclusive, it's easier to patent it,
mm-hmm.
so it's a supplier-driven angle.
Right.
Anything that can help reduce labour costs
mm-hmm.
is also a consideration.
Right.
Anything that can speed the game up is also a consideration from an operator's point of view.
Right.
But I'm a little old-fashioned. I look at it from the player's point of view,
mm-hmm.
from the gambler's perspective,
right?
Shuffling machines speed the game up. But do I, as a player, do I actually want the game to be speeded
right.
up?
Exactly. Right.
So, the progressive jackpot, it looks nice.
Yeah.
But if I sit at that table and don't make that progressive jackpot bet, because I think it's a bad bet, And I get that win in hand,
yeah.
am I going to be upset? I sure am.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, is that going to deter me from sitting at that table?
Right.
So generally speaking, in most consumer areas, technology benefits the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, technology in gaming actually benefits the operator
right.
by increasing the cost of the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So what we don't know is how many people have been deterred from blackjack by the change from 3-2 to 6-5. How many higher stakes players don't have the same respect for casinos and don't visit as frequently,
right.
etc. And three card poker is the perfect example of understanding this. The pair plus wager, when we operated the game,
mm-hmm.
it it was 4-1 on the flush. It was just over 2% house advantage. And due to incompetent installations when Shuffle Master owned the game, with the lack of diligence and the operators not getting the installations correct, and I observed hundreds of dollars of errors per hour at strip locations in the early 2000s, they had to increase the house advantage in order to keep the operators happy.
Right.
And it went from 4-1 to 3-1. The house advantage on a primary wager was changed from just over 2% to just over 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the purpose of any form of regulatory field trial for a game when a primary wager, the house advantage on a primary wager, can be trebled and nobody says anything about it, you know? So would three-card poker be far more prominent today because of a more positive player experience if the house advantage on the pair plus had been left alone?
Right.
Or would the operators have not been willing to support the game because of this concept that it wasn't holding enough? Oh, I've got to get a high hold. I've got to get a high hold, you know.
Right.
Well, you don't. You can't do much with a hold percentage. You can do much with the cash.
Sure.
You can't do much with a hold percentage. So there hasn't been the retrospective, and that is very difficult. How do we analyse this? You know, so there has been so many introductions of electronics that haven't made the breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
The Digideal platform, the DEQ platform, they haven't really made the breakthrough, and there are some. Interblock does a good job now with their e-tables. They look like to be the best, but it seems to be a different demographic to the table game demographic. I see that as, I don't see it as competing with table games. I see that as complementary. It's catering for lower stakes players. It's catering for players who don't want to interact with a dealer or interact so much with other players, and apparently they're getting a much higher participation of ladies playing than they do in the conventional table games. So I see that as a very different market. I don't see that specifically as table games.
Okay, great. Well, Derek, thanks for joining us. I really enjoy talking to you, and you've got all the expertise when it comes to introducing new games into the tables, and too bad the industry doesn't listen to you half the time.
Well, I have retired now, but thanks for chatting with me, and I enjoyed just going, reflecting on old times. But I've got a broad understanding of many aspects of the industry, The industry seems to navel gaze with a certain kind of group of people and restrict their outlook by doing that exercise somehow.
No question. Well, thanks,
it's
good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you
all right. Thanks, sir.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB podcast, sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based casinos. If you want to hear more about the topics discussed today, visit GGBMagazine.com for all the news and trends in the casino industry. For weekly updates, subscribe to GGB News, which delivers all the news of the gaming industry to your desktop, waiting for you every Monday morning. Please join us next week for another edition of the GGB podcast. And don't forget to follow GGB on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Have a great week.